Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 26, which is Wonderful Krishna. This is the chapter just after Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, and before the chapter where Indra and Surabhi offer their prayers. Shukadeva Goswami said, "The cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows." I'll just skip through here and read some of the verses which are pertinent to the theme we're pursuing. Also paraphrase a little bit from Kavi Karnapur's presentation. Since there's so much emphasis in Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill on the Lord's potency to remove obstacles and uplift difficulties and grant protection to his devotees, that the theme of pride and doubt were like main threads running through these various chapters. So, in Kavi Karnapur's description, it's very charming and humorous that after the whole pastime of Govardhan Hill, the cowherd man approached Nanda Maharaj and said, "You formally dispelled all our doubts and fears about forsaking the Indra Yajna to worship Govardhan Hill. But now we are again assailed with doubts. It must be because we're so attached to our prosperity and prestige that these doubts have arisen within our minds. But we are approaching you, our beloved king, to dispel them for us. And then they recounted how, you know, when Krishna was just an infant, just after his birth, how this powerful Rakshasi, Putana, who had the military strength to annihilate vast armies of ordinary men, tried to kill Krishna, and he sucked out all of her bad qualities and gave her new life. And then, one by one, they are remembering and recounting how Krishna had dealt with the different demons and how amazing it all was. And now this, for 1 week continuously, he's holding up a great mountain with the little finger of his left hand. So now there's doubts arising in our minds about his identity." And then they culminated that whole theme with one verse. They said, "How is it that we are becoming, through all these ordeals and everything else, more and more spontaneously attracted and attached to Krishna?" That's the first half of the question in this one verse. Second half: how is it that he is becoming more and more attracted and attached to us? And if you'd follow this theme a little bit, you know, backwards and forwards, you'd see that the attraction between Krishna and the Brijabasis was ever increasing and is always ever increasing. And as with the episode where the cows were nursing their already weaned calves in favor of their newborn calves on Govardhan Hill. And the cowherd men were so upset that they could not control the cows when they saw their calves, because that was the year when all the calves and cowherd boys were expansions of Krishna. So the anuraga, the attraction, was too strong. The cowherd men couldn't control the cows. They were galloping down Govardhan Hill. And they were upset because they were not able to perform their duty of herding and controlling the cows. But then when they saw their children, their anger and frustration just dissipated. And they were noticing that their affection for their children and their children's affection for them was ever increasing. After that year, when their children came back, the attraction just went back to Krishna. Their attraction, their attachment to Krishna was greater than for their own children. And Krishna's attachment for them was greater than their own children. This is unnatural, and they're asking Nanda Maharaj to dispel this doubt for them. So it's interesting the way Nanda Maharaj replied to that question, because he didn't exactly answer it directly. He did not come out and say that, well, because Krishna's the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. He didn't say that. There's no need to say that. And it would be a violation to say that, because the Brijabasis are on a state of Krishna consciousness that their understanding of Krishna, they're in a super-awareness that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're beyond that awareness, because to them, he is their beloved, or their child, or their paramour. They're not ignorant of the understanding that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that realization is so overshadowed by love. And therefore, Nanda Maharaj answered that all I can do is tell you the words I've been reflecting on, which Garga Muni told me in that secret name-giving ceremony in the cowshed, that your boy appears in every millennium to give protection to the weak and helpless and annihilate those who are unruly and misusing their power and control. In the Satya Yuga, he appears in a white form. In the Treta Yuga, he proclaims victory in a reddish form. In Dwapara Yuga, he's dark. In Once in a Day of Brahma, in the Dwapara Yuga, he appears in this form of Krishna. And he also has a golden form. Didn't directly answer their question, but answered in such a way as he put them into such a state of deep contemplation that satisfied their questions on a higher level. So, this chapter, Wonderful Krishna, is really wonderful, because the cowherd men are repeating all the pastimes they've witnessed, including the one that they had just witnessed and hadn't had a chance to talk about before. And after they recite the various pastimes and how Krishna saved them again and again and again, they articulate their actual question and interest in this way. How is it that our affection is ever increasing for this boy, more than our affection or attachment for anything else? And conversely, in the same verse, how is it that his attraction is ever increasing for us? Because when Krishna was holding Govardhan Hill, it was similar to his lunch every day with the gopas. That Krishna was like the whirl of the lotus, surrounded by unlimited petals, his 8 intimate sakas, like the first eight petals, each of those surrounded by their eight intimate sakas and their eight. So like a lotus with unlimited petals, and Krishna is the world, every cowherd boy thinking, Krishna's looking just at me. He's joking just with me. He's exchanging prasadam just with me. And in their humility, they're thinking that everybody, all these other cowherd boys are so much better than me, but Krishna's so wonderful, he's so kind and merciful. He's looking just at me. It's an appreciation of how the Lord, in whom we are all seeking shelter, is also wanting to take shelter in the heart of his creation and his creatures, wanting our love. So Krishna has designed the creation in such a way that all our egotistic differences and conflicts can be reconciled simply by coming together and celebrating the one thing we all have in common, that we're all part of Krishna. And based on that unity, all differences become embellishments, enhancing the unity which holds everything in cosmos, held together by the attraction we call gravity, while at the same time held in place, in orbit, by the outward movements of a dynamic universe, a centrifugal force holding everything out, the gravity holding it in, the perfect combination being the balance which constitutes cosmos and prevents everything from disintegrating into total chaos. And as we come together to unite on the spiritual principle that we all come from Krishna, our love for Krishna awakens and increases, and from this chapter we can understand that Krishna's love towards us is also increasing. So Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill is very symbolic and very rich in Siddhanta. It is a very dramatic visualization and affirmation of everything the scriptures teach. And it also contains an important lesson for the modern world. Today's world has become so demoniac that the children of the earth, ceasing to be satisfied with taking milk from their mother, be she cow or human or earth herself, have begun plundering earth's resources as if they have no end. Drilling the earth for oil when she bountifully gives natural organic fuels is paramount to being dissatisfied with mother's milk and insisting on drinking her blood. The population has become one of vampires. And whenever there's a disturbance in the balance of creation, the Lord Himself, Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Klami Bhavati Bhavata, becomes and puts things back in order, in balance, by reminding us of His supremacy and the attraction which is natural between the soul and His Maker. So when Krishna was about 7 years old, he noticed Nanda Maharaj making arrangements for an elaborate sacrifice. And he started to question, what is going on here? And Nanda thought, well, Krishna's just a little child. He didn't take him too seriously. He was so busy with his preparations. And Krishna, he was clinging to his father, saying, what is the demigod being worshipped? What benefit do you expect to derive from this sacrifice? And what is the proof of the sanction of the sacrifice? And Nanda Maharaj is just ignoring Krishna. Is it Vedic or is it social? And if it's social, then why are you taking it so seriously? Unless something is sanctioned by Vedic scripture, Shastra, and Guru and Sadhu, it's not to be taken so seriously. Why is everybody running around mechanically in all directions? And why are you so distracted? And finally, Nanda Maharaj began to think that Krishna is actually asking some very intelligent questions. But most of all, Krishna said, you're my father. It's your duty to instruct me. Otherwise, how will I learn? So he was evoking love from his father, which attracted his attention. So he said, we are preparing to worship Indra because we're cowherds. The rain is essential for our flocks and ourselves. So we want to please Indra, as our ancestors have done since who knows when, many generations. And it is Indra who arranges to send the rains. So our sustenance is dependent on his pleasure. And then Krishna began to systematically refute Nanda's answer. He said, no, the rain is a natural phenomenon. You see that rain falls in the middle of the ocean. There's no need for rain in the ocean, and there's nobody worshipping Indra there. And even if there is such a Indra, the demigods are not independent. They cannot do as they please. They're bound by karma, and they're bound to award the fruits of one's karma. And our karma, our duty, our occupation is tending the cows, protecting the cows. And they derive all their necessities, as do we, from Govardhan Hill. When Mahaprabhu was running after the Chatak Parvat, seeing it as Govardhan Hill, he was reciting that verse, which Srimati Radharani gave as an answer to her own question about the identity of the best devotee of Krishna. Of all devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. O friends, this hill provides Krishna and Balaram, as well as all their cows, calves, and cowherd friends, with all their necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, Govardhan Hill offers respects to the Lord, being blessed by the touch of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna and Balaram. Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. Krishna in this verse, or Srimati Radharani rather, is giving the solution to all problems. Dependence on nature's arrangement, of which Govardhan Hill is the very emblem of the earth. So, by Krishna's mercy, Govardhan Hill became the king of mountains, surpassing all comparison and metaphor. Greater than Mount Kailash, which is composed only of silver, more precious than Mount Meru, though made of gold, is still material nature. Greater than Vaikuntha, which is bereft of Madhurya, and fully transcendental, identical with Krishna, Govardhan Hill, kind and gentle, offers protection even to the deer and wild animals, but to speak of the devotees. Like a giant touchstone fulfilling all desires, Govardhan Hill is fragrant from the streams which pick up the scent of the roots of sandalwood trees and distribute that down the slopes, over the waterfalls, through the valleys. And in beauty. Grover Dunhill is bluish. From the rays of the sapphire, which are reflected and refracted by the crystal rocks, making Grover Dunhill resemble Balaram with the bluish hue of his garments. And the white emeralds reflecting the golden, the gold in Grover Dunhill makes it look like Lord Narayan dressed in jewels. And the waterfalls cascading from the peaks being illumined by the emeralds and the rubies and other jewels creates a luminous, effulgent kind of rainbow over the various peaks of Grover Dunhill. And the effulgence of the Vaidurya gems illumines the sky similar to the northern lights. And the jeweled caves which adorn Grover Dunhill are more splendid than temples and are the item especially important to the gopis who can't meet Krishna publicly normally but have this natural arrangement. Warm in winter and cool in summer, Grover Dunhill makes an atmosphere of harmony and sweetness and beauty and charm to please the Lord. So anyway, when Krishna was asking Nanda, the king of Braja, the abode of kindness, simplicity, and joy, these questions, and then when he came to the point of, no, actually, you see, Krishna gave very logical, philosophical reasons why there's no need to worship Indra, but they should worship Grover Dunhill. But Nanda Maharaj still wasn't convinced because this was such a customary thing. They'd been doing it for so many generations. He was actually afraid if they stopped, they'd get in trouble. That Indra, who was sometimes like a child, more childish than childlike, he's always getting in trouble. They were afraid if they canceled this, they'd get in trouble. Because when a child just always gets what he wants, then he's always angry and frustrated, whether he gets what he wants or not. And Indra had been spoiled by regularly receiving this worship and thinking it was meant for him. And that he was the actual, Indra means king or lord. And he forgot that he was servant. And Krishna could foresee this, so he arranged. So it really wasn't the logic in Krishna's arguments that convinced Nanda Maharaj, it was his love. In this way, love is higher and more powerful than logic and reason. And in this case, not only more convincing, but it dispelled the fear of retaliation, which they actually did experience. So, when Nanda Maharaj was explaining to Krishna why it's so necessary to worship the demigods because they preserve what we have and carry what we lack and assure us destination of heaven, Krishna just had this smile to cover the bitter taste of those words. So he hid his feelings and systematically refuted everything that Nanda Maharaj had said. And he said, even if you say that the super soul is the cause of rain, that's also not true. Because the super soul just sets up the world to act by the laws of karma, the interaction of the three modes. He's not directly involved. So just take. And then Nanda said, well, it'll take so long to arrange the festival you described. No. Just take everything you've prepared for the worship of Indra and use it to worship Grover Dunhill. Make lakes of creamy sweet rice, yogurt, and buttermilk, and then make it like a mountain, Anukut. Then take Malpura and what are those fancy chapatis? Puris. Malpuris and then puris. They're like the flat stones on the sides of the quinns. And then on top of them, you put the vegetables, which will be like the vegetation at the lower slopes and the plains. And then the cliffs and the start made out of rock candy, covered with fruits and flowers and vegetables. And everything was cooked in different colors. It was like a fall, an autumn mountain, with camphor crown on the top, and waterfalls of ghee, and fountains of milk, made it look like shimmering Mount Sumeru, glistening in the rainfall. And in no time, they were so amazed that they made this huge mountain. And then Krishna was instructing Nanda Maharaj, now offer Paditya to worship his lotus feet, and he began the puja. And then, suddenly and spontaneously, the fun-loving, playful, indomitable Sri Krishna assumed a huge form, as if he just came right out of Govardhan Hill. And on the peak, he assumed this huge form which was touching the sky. And then Krishna down and holding Nanda said, "Look, look, he's come in person. There's the proof that this yajna is authorized. You never see Indra come. But look, there's Giriraj in person. Look, he's eating." And then he saw this huge form reaching down and with his hands scooping up hundreds of pounds of Malpura and Puris and just eating and reaching and drinking from all the kuns went dry. But as soon as the kun went dry, it filled right up again. He's just taking out huge peaks of boga and eating, and as soon as it would replenish again, increase, look, look. And the only difference between that massive form eating on top of Govardhan Hill and the little one down holding Nanda Maharaj's hand is that one was huge and this one was small. And as he's eating, with his left hand, he's making mudras as if mocking at Krishna. They're having some little rasa while this is going on. And then, look, this is the proof that he has accepted your loving devotion. He's become hungry to take your offerings. And look, he's eating everything. And everyone is offering their respects to Govardhan Hill to see he is the person. And the singers began singing, the bandis glorifying, the charanas singing. All the temples were resounding with music. Everyone became intoxicated by the joy of the situation. Wave after wave of singers and dancers began circumambulating Govardhan Hill. The oxen were all decked out, and the cows were all painted up, and the gopis riding in the ox carts were more beautiful than the demigoddesses in heaven on their chariots. And in the sky, the kinnaras joined in the festival with euphoric dance. So even the clouds in the sky were filled with demigoddesses dancing to the joy of the occasion. And everyone in the universe became so satisfied and delighted at heart, including the demigods, all except for their king, who all of a sudden got this terrible headache. He got word of what was going on, and he thought about it for a minute. Those ignorant cowherd men, have they become overwhelmed by false pride? See how we project whatever we have onto the way we perceive others. Don't they know who I am? That by the ridiculous words of this ignorant child, these coward men appear to be more dull and dumb than the animals they tend. I'm Indra. My glory is my intellect is praised by many goddesses of learning. Don't they know who I am? And just they gave up my... What to do? And he thought a minute. And then he called for his Samvartika clouds. These clouds have no purpose in the creation other than annihilation of the universe at the time of apocalypse. Until that time, they're just unmanifest in one corner of the Mahatattva. And they're called just when it's time for apocalypse to inundate the world with water up to Swarga. So when Indra called upon the Samvartika clouds, they were very surprised. What's going on? Has the apocalypse come early? What is the mission you're calling us for? Are we to destroy the universe? And Indra said, no, it's not a big mission. It involves only one small village. Use all your destructive potency to shake the earth and concentrate all your destructive fury and totally destroy that cavern village of Braj. Meanwhile, down in Braj, while everybody's simply absorbed in singing and dancing, all of a sudden this bitter Arctic cold wind started blowing from the north. And all across the horizon, dark cloud banks began to block out the sun. And then some very swift, ominous clouds started streaking across the sky and circling Braj. It looked like some kind of air games. And then the rain came down, like a raging river that had just burst through its dam and was falling down from the heavens. And in no time, the ground was so covered that the only place that was not submerged was Govardhan Hill. And some of the people actually started climbing up Govardhan Hill. First, they put their cows in the cow sheds. But then everything was just getting demolished, and cyclone winds were ripping everything apart. The cows took their calves beneath them. The bulls were getting pelted by these big chunks of ice. And when those ice, like hail, was pelting them in the horns, they were just getting furious and bellowing and jumping around and looking for something to attack, but they couldn't see where it was coming from. Everything in the entire universe became pitch black. Nobody in the universe could see anything. Except the Brijabasis, who had full illumination from the lotus toenails of Sri Krishna, and Indra, who was sending constant thunderbolts and constant... The thunder was reverberating with this ominous roar. The clouds were making like a demoniac roar of their own by the cyclone winds, and everybody was terrified. And some of the people were claiming, Krishna just said, no, don't be afraid. Watch me perform an unprecedented pastime. And then he did something, or rather he didn't do something, which he normally does. Normally when Krishna confronts a demon, he tightens his belt. But this time he didn't do it. He just nonchalantly reached over, and this 7-year-old Gopa, with the little finger of his left hand, raised the mountain. Just very nonchalantly. Because he knew that Indra was proud. If this is a big battle scene, Indra's going to be famous even if he loses. So Krishna, very nonchalantly, when he raised the mountain, it like when it severed from the earth, it made this cracking roar that just reverberated and resounded and echoed through the whole universe. This just spreading terror everywhere. All through the universe, the elephants were jumping in the river, and just, it was like a terror, a scene of complete terror. And everyone was just taking... And then when Krishna lifted the hill, the Brijabasis were looking like, what are we supposed to do now? I said, oh, mother, don't worry. Father, don't be afraid. My dear friends, don't think that I'm going to drop this hill. Just come on under and you'll find shelter. So they entered beneath Govardhan Hill, and there they found, to their amazement, an expansive pastoral valley scene with nice clear sky, and everything was luminous, endless fields of rich fresh green barley, beautiful crystalline lakes, a little improvised town, all the pleasures and necessities and delights that anyone could imagine were to be found there. And when Krishna raised the hill, the boulders falling from the perimeter made a big dike and held out the water. So they all just gathered around Krishna, and all eyes were fixed on him, and everyone felt his eyes fixed on them. And then Indra sent the wind god as like for like a surveillance crew. Go see what's happening and give me a report. So the wind god went and returned to Indra. I can't see anything. It looks like a total disaster. Everybody's dead. I couldn't find a soul anywhere. Then he said, go back and get the details. So he went back and looked closer. Oh my God. He came back and said, Indra, nothing happened. They are living better and enjoying more than they ever have before. So when that mountain ate the sacrifice, it got so enlivened and energized, it just raised up into the air. And they're all underneath the mountain. And you think, what? A flying mountain? Has Mainak again grown wings? There used to be a mountain, Mainak, that had wings that would fly around. But it created a lot of disturbance because wherever it landed, it would just crush cities and villages. So Indra, with his lightning bolts, he just cut off the wings and grounded it. Has Mainak again grown wings? I've never heard of any other flying mountain. And then he thought, I better go check this out myself. So he jumped on this elephant, began punching him with the goat, hurry up! He was getting very uneasy. He wanted it. So he sped to Braj. And then he saw. You see, the universe was so dark that the very coverings of the universe had become as black as the soot covering the bottom of a pot. Everything was pitch black. But then Indra saw that rising above the Samvartika clouds was this jeweled mountain peak. And at its base were friendly white clouds, and then raindrops just decorating. It was like a pearl fringe around the bottom of an umbrella under which everybody is having a big party during the apocalypse. And Indra saw, oh, is this some special form of my Lord Narayan? And if it is, I'm in big trouble. So, meanwhile, below the hill, Krishna explained to the Brijavasis that don't be fearful, because you've seen that this mountain in reality is a person, a transcendental person who is situated far beyond the fears and apprehension of the mind and senses. And then Krishna, this is Krishna, he said, you know, during the regular apocalypse, everybody in their subtle bodies enters into the stomach of Lord Narayan. Wouldn't you rather stay forever having a party in the belly of Govardhan Hill? So that kind of dispelled all their fears. But Mother Jashoda started getting disturbed. My darling Damodar, you haven't eaten for so long. Can you just please set down your flute and hold out your hand and let me feed you? It's very dangerous for you to play that flute because, you know, it tends to melt stones by its sweet ragas. And if this mountain melts, we're all going to be in big trouble. And Krishna said, why do you think we've been so long? It's just been a few moments. Why are you making... And then he said, well, Balaram's hungry. So then Krishna started to take notice. So then she told Subal, and then Bhakti said, yeah, Krishna, you're not supposed to disobey your elders. Do what she says. And then she told Subal, hey, I'll take care of it. So he went, said, Krishna, you better listen to your mata. Put down your flute, hold out your hand. And then Subal wiped his face with his own cloth. And then Jashoda said, take this nice tambul. It will remove all anxiety, dispel all fatigue, and fill you with joy. And if you don't like that, just then take something that you do like. Nice sweet cakes or whatever. So then Subal was hand-feeding Krishna, and he made Mother Jashoda very happy. So when Indra realized the gravity of his offense, he went to Brihaspati. And Brihaspati told him that your offense is so grave, don't even go to Krishna for forgiveness. Usually if you've offended someone, you have to go to that person, but Brihaspati said, don't. He said, get a Surabhi cow from heaven and, you know, have her intercede on your behalf. So, meanwhile, when Indra saw what he had done, he called back the Samvartika clouds, and after aborting 7 whole days, the earth gave birth to a nice Astami, 8th child, in the form of sunrise. And the Brijabasis saw in the distance, from what was dark, the rooftops and gateways to their houses all nicely washed and glittering, so clean. So Krishna said, okay, you can all go home now. Nobody wanted to leave. So the cowherd boys went out, called the cows, and the cows are looking around, and they kind of peeked out from under it. Is it really over? And then all of a sudden they shot out. Yeah, it's up. But then Krishna was still... So then they turned around and ran back under the hill. They wouldn't leave Krishna. He had to... He just kind of like tossed the hill off like a flower ball, and it landed very gently. And then Krishna herded the cows out himself. And then everyone was glorifying Krishna, and the gopis were so happy because they could never publicly sing about Krishna before. But after this pastime, everybody was singing about Krishna. So the gopis did not have to conceal their feelings and suppress their emotions like they did in the past. So, in this way, Govardhan Hill fulfilled all their desires in another way. So, from the sky, there was prayers by Indra, who was praying that, my Lord, I did not understand who you are. Now I know that you are none other than my Sri Hari, who removes all obstacles from the heart of his servants. And then Indra came down with Surabhi on a ridge in Govardhan Hill. So Krishna went off on a stroll by himself, where he met Indra. No, he met Surabhi. And Surabhi said, my dear Lord, you always give inner strength and solace to surrendered souls. You see this person behind me? He's really a good devotee, and he's really repentant at heart, but he's afraid to come before you. so please forgive him. And then then Indra came and touched his crown to Krishna's lotus feet and offered his prayers and begged forgiveness. And then after an intimate private scene, Brahma, Lord Shiva, Narada, all the great sages appeared, wanting to hold an abhishek. And whatever was needed for that abhishek to spontaneously appear, Govardhan Hill provided a throne. Vayu, the wind god personified, came waving a chamara. The Lord's own conch shell filled all directions with auspicious vibrations. Sudarshan expanded himself into many lamps to illuminate the arena, and the sacred rivers personified came holding pots of holy waters. The Lord of the mountains brought gems, and the goddess of the Malaya Hills brought sandalwood, which she began grinding on the stone from Govardhan Hill. Garuda spread his wings as a huge canopy, and the different mantras and prayers personified began offering mantras and prayers. And the apsaras danced and performed a special drama in heaven, which everyone could see. And then Brahma was just about to begin the puja when Lord Shiva came up to him and whispered into his ear, "O Brahma, you see this boy before us who's captivated everyone's hearts. He should perform the puja." Formerly, Narada Muni gave a mantra to sages and men to remove obstacles on the path of bhakti. That's the Gopal mantra. This young, charming boy is he personified. Let him personally offer the puja. This is Gopal mantra, whose meter is Gayatri, and he will remove all obstacles. And then when he began the puja, the milk ocean appeared, personified, offering conch shells. Where to place them? Mount Meru made stands to hold the different conch shells. The Van Devis came and offered wildflowers. Bhumi offered fragrances. And after performing the puja, after the bathing, Parvati instructed some pretty chaste girls how to dress Krishna. And everyone was so satisfied. But Krishna was just grave. He found the whole thing quite boring. Couldn't wait till it was over so he could get back to the gopas and cows. So, finally, Krishna kind of hurried things up and it all ended and all the demigods went back. Except Indra, who stayed there because he was still so disturbed at heart. And as Surabhi was leaving, she said to Krishna, "Will you be my Indra now? This other Indra made such a mess of things. Will you be my Indra?" And then Indra coronated Krishna, Sri Govinda. The 7 days and nights, which was like 7 hours of joy-filled festival for the Brijabasis, was like 7 millenniums of total anguish and torment for Indra. His ego was just so pained and disturbed and tormented, like 7 millenniums of intensive, concentrated grief. But after revealing his heart to Krishna, he felt such relief, he coronated the Lord Sri Govinda, one who gives pleasure to the mind, the heart, and the senses. And then Indra was leaving, just getting ready to leave, Krishna said to him, Are you still upset with me? He said, you're very near and dear to me. You're my servant. So you should reveal your heart and tell me truthfully. Have you forgiven me for disrupting your sacrifice? I did it just to relieve you from the burden of pride which you were carrying, which just fills the mind with so much distress and bewilderment. So I did that just to favor you. So please, when you return to heaven, enjoy your kingdom, but don't ever again let your mind become swept away by false prestige and lose your proper vision. So as Indra was leaving, he set down his bow in the sky, as Shukadeva Goswami explains symbolically. Indra left his bow in the sky, and it became a rainbow, the archetype of hope and redemption. He had surrendered his fight with the Lord and found peace and protection and surrender and proud to admit defeat in the hands of a superior power, the power of love personified in the Lord of Govardhan. Very much. Any questions, comments?
So Krishna held the mountain 7 days. He didn't eat and sleep during that time.
He was there. Yeah, he didn't sleep. But Mother Jashoda was getting very disturbed. My darling Damodar, you quit playing that Murli. It sounds nice, but it's not going to fill your belly. So she got. And she said, Balaram's hungry, even if you aren't.
He was playing it while I was holding the...
No, Subal, got up next to him, very gently took away his flute and wiped his face and took Mother Jashoda's offerings and put it in his hand and put his hand down to Mother Jashoda so she could hand feed him. He didn't want to. He was having too much fun. He couldn't figure out why Mother Jashoda was saying it had been such a long time that you haven't eaten. But Subal and Bhaktu told him, you have to listen to your mata. So he surrendered. Yes? Oh, Aniyor. This is Aniyor here. The cowherd men were bringing ox carts full of glovedmans and sabdis and halavas and everything, and they kept filling up the kuns, and Giridhari kept emptying everything, and he just kept saying, Aniyar, give me more. Kept bringing more, until there wasn't anything left. And he wasn't satisfied. Aniyar, give me more. What to do? And one Brahmin is very wise. He put one tulsi leaf on the mountain, and then Giridhari was satisfied. It was the exact same thing at Mahaprabhu's Leela. When they were at the Mahaprakash, they brought all the boga in town, and Lord Gauranga had devoured everything. And he was in the Aniyor mood. Finally, they had to give him some Ganges water to pacify him. In all cases, we see that we can only please Krishna through his devotees, Sarabhi and Tulsi. And we're like little Indras that are just in too much trouble for all the nonsense that we have done. So the shelter-giving devotees are our only approach to wonderful Krishna.
While that was all taking place, what was Balaram in the course of the conversation with Nandarajan lifting over to the hill?
Well, he was just kind of standing there seeing what he could do. So the cowherd boys were, you know, they were taking their sticks and holding it up. I said, hey, it's so light. Krishna, you can just let it go. We can handle it. I said, you think so? So Krishna started to let it down. Oh, no, Krishna! Okay. So they all formed little groups. The Mataji stayed with their unmarried daughters, and usually their married daughters would gather around them, and Radhika and her friends in their little circles, and the Gopas in their little circles. So Balaram was just standing there, acting like he was hungry so that Mother Jashoda could convince. Everybody was just like, you know, the eyes were all fixed on Krishna, and everybody was seeing that Krishna was just fixed on them. And of course, singing and dancing was permeating the atmosphere. They didn't even care if it was raining. They were just so filled with pleasure. Because just imagine, Braj Leela is a combination of, well, it's a combination of a lot of things. Meeting and separation, joy and disaster, all these things are enhancing one another. So at the end of the day, you know, the gopas are sad because Krishna goes home. Of course, Balaram goes with them, but the other gopas, they don't want to go home. They have to. Whereas for the gopis, you know, just before everybody wakes up, they got to go home. And so everybody's, you know, all disturbed that at a certain time of the day, they have to part with Krishna. But for 7 weeks, for 7 days, it was like a camping excursion where everybody was just all together and nobody had to go anywhere. So they were just all... It was constant exchange, though. There was constant joking and rasa and different loving exchanges and interesting dialogues going on for the whole time. It's not like a passive adoration state. There was a lot of interaction and reciprocation going on the whole time at every moment. Yeah, he's holding his flute. He's right here, as you see. Well, he's holding it with both hands, but he just played it with one hand, held the hill with the other. Well, see, really, the amazing thing and the wonderful thing wasn't that Krishna could hold up a mountain. The wonderful thing is that he could demolish a mountain of pride, which even the Brijabasis were saying, you know, were commenting like that, that that was the most wonderful thing. And the most wonderful thing was not Krishna giving shelter to the Brijabasis. The most wonderful thing is how he is giving shelter to Indra from his own ego. Those were the essential siddhantic aspects of wonderful Krishna in this pastime and chapter.
The details, some of the details that you're describing are not found in the 10th canto of Prabhupada.
Kavi Karnapur gives a pretty elaborate description in his book, Ananda Vrindavan Champam. Also, the Puranas give. Of course, a lot of the descriptions are a little bit different, which goes for any pastime, because according to one's particular rasa, he's seeing with a different emphasis and perspective. But those details were mostly from Kavi Karnapur.
He was a contemporary?
Shivananda Sen's son. He gives a very elaborate description of that pastime. Of course, he's got such a unique poetic style, which is not only aesthetically enchanting, but extremely rich in certain aspects of Siddhanta that are not so vivid elsewhere. Got a really unique touch of presenting things and expressing things.
does the fate of that Indra being opposed, as we understand, what was the fate of that particular personality after Ramanujan?
Well, Lord Nityananda explained it to Jiva Goswami that when they came to Surabhikund in Navadvip and explained the pastime. As Lord Nityananda explained it to Jiva Goswami, Indra was still apprehensive. He was thinking that, I keep doing these things. I keep getting in trouble, I keep getting forgiven, and I keep doing this, similar things over again. This was really bad. So he had just like lost all confidence in himself. So, as Lord Nityananda explained it, he went back to Krishna again with Surabhi and told him just that. Krishna, I know you've forgiven me and all that, but I don't even trust myself because you keep forgiving me, I keep doing the same thing over and over again. So, what am I going to do? And Krishna told him that you have to stay fully engaged in devotional service. That is your only protection. Now it's interesting because in that was recounted in Navadvip Mahatmya, where Lord Nityananda is explaining who the different personalities came as in Chaitanya Lila. He doesn't say who Indra came as, because Indra didn't really come direct. Well, he did come directly in a lot of the pastimes, but he came like indirectly, because Ramananda Rai is Vishakha, Arjuna, and Arjuna. And Arjuna is the son of Indra, who is in some ways considered to be Indra. So he had like an indirect role, but also in some of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, Indra does come in person. So really that was the final outcome, that he was allowed participation in Sankirtan movement. Which has the most powerfully purifying effect. And that was seen as the ultimate good fortune for Indra. It's not the only one, but it's the first one that I can think of. At the wrestling arena of Kamsa, you know, all the rasas were expressed. But in Braj, this is the first one and the best one I can think of. Yeah, it's action-packed. I mean, everybody's getting their all their desires fulfilled simultaneously.
Is there a portion of that past time where the Sambhartaka clouds themselves also are somehow they just interplay after Indra confesses and makes reveals, but they also have some?
I never heard that. They got totally exhausted during the battle. But, you know, on top of the hill, there were a lot of animals that weren't under the hill. They were on the hill, like the deer. They were just totally undisturbed. But the lions, they were angry. So the lions were like, you know, tearing these clouds. And the clouds were getting all, you know, torn to shreds by these lions who were, like, you know. So the clouds went back to Indra and said, look, you know, we are exhausted. Can we just call this thing off? And Indra wouldn't even talk to him. He was so angry. He never got exhausted. He was just so full of rage that he never got tired, but everybody else was just ready to give it up.
The whole rest of the universe was also getting pelted, or it was just basically focused on Vrindavan?
It was concentrated on Vrindavan, but everyone, everywhere in the universe was in a state of extreme distress and total darkness. Well, when he saw Braj, you know, I thought, that's my home. And then he got so heavy that Plastamini said, okay, let's take a rest. You said that wherever you put me down, that's where I stay. Withdraws from mortal vision. But as Krishna said, he's a person, and he lives beyond the realm of our fears and apprehensions, transcendentally situated. So he's up forever there. At first I couldn't understand when I came here and asked, where's Govardhan Hill? They said, Prabhupada said that all these hills are Govardhan Hill. But really, Govardhan Hill is a ridge. It's a ridge that goes right through the center of Vrindavan and has a lot of little peaks.
So this particular piece of land that we're hoping to develop for ox pasture, it's not actually just the highest point right there. It actually
goes to where it goes. Govardhan Hill is in the form of a peacock. Radhakund and Shyamakund are the eyes on the head of the peacock, which is directly above us. And then there's the neck, and then there's the main body, which is Giri Govardhan's, Radha Giridhari's land. And then the tail goes down through Vrindavan Das's place and Gopa Damodar's, and down to the forest is Puchari. So the tail end is like just past Vrindavan Das, behind, in the forest behind Vrindavan Das's place. Well, there's one peak that nobody drives on or walks on. I'll show you sometime. There's a few peaks, actually. You can't walk on. No, I'll show you sometime. Go around until he's revealing himself a little bit more, day by day. These are the lords of Govardhan Hill. Thank you all so much for joining us. Anything else? How's it going, Chris? They're giving the right situation, recording studios. The technology doesn't get me going.